What is up, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, ministry, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. This is episode 14, and we are talking to Sarah. Now, Sarah is somebody that JJ and I have gotten to know over the last few months and just have really appreciated as an insightful person. She is a nurse, an RN. She has recently changed roles from somebody working on a cardiac floor to somebody working with patients doing transplants. She has some great insight just into what it is to be a nurse and to do God's work. And I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from her. We also get into this thing about singleness. Recently at Life Church, she has talked a little bit about singleness, and I think it's just a topic we don't talk about enough as the church. It's something that's sort of just brushed under the rug and sort of ignored, and I think she brings to light some things that we all should really think about. So she's very thoughtful. I think you're really going to appreciate her thoughts on that. So as always, I would appreciate some shares. You can go ahead and rate and review the podcast as well on your favorite podcasting app, and I hope you enjoy hearing from Sarah. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you for coming over and joining me for a little podcast episode here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's fun. It's fun.
I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually, this is our second try. The first try was interrupted by a baby.
Yep.
But yeah.
It's here a very cute interruption. So I'm good with it.
Yes. I didn't think it was that cute that night, but you know.
That's because he's yours. I got to go home that night and not have to worry about babies. So.
That's valid. Yeah. So why don't we start off by you just introducing yourself to us?
Mm-hmm. I'm Sarah, obviously. Everybody starts with where they grew up. I grew up in Minnesota. I'm one of those obnoxious people who kind of think that like my home state is the best place in the world.
You're talking to a Texan, so nothing obnoxious about it.
Yeah. No. Well, mine is true though. So.
Oh, no.
Kidding. I'm kidding. Am I? I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. Grew up in Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis. Wonderful home growing up with. I grew up in the church, so that has definitely shaped my story. I grew up in a wonderful church, wonderful home. I'm super close to my family still. Ended up going to a Catholic high school, which was really interesting for my faith. Small Christian schools growing up, Christian education was always super important to my family. So did that elementary school, middle school, and then high school, kind of jumped ship and went to a Catholic school, which was just different enough of a breed of Christianity that like it kind of caused me to challenge some thoughts and figure out why I believed what I believed, which was really cool. In retrospect, it was a little difficult at the time, but I really enjoyed it. And I really see that as formative for my faith. And yeah, made some really good friends, overheard some interesting conversations from, you know, high schoolers are always, you know, in religion classes trying to figure out what they believe. And you hear some funny things and, you know, but everybody's got their journey, so they're figuring it out. Had a great tiny little youth group growing up. I remember going on a mission trip to Canada where there was six of us in the group. So that kind of tiny little crew in my home church was really helpful. We all got really close to each other. I still feel very close to those people. They're all over the country. I, you know, haven't talked to some of them in years, but they're just wonderful, wonderful, solid people. And, you know, you share things in those environments that you don't share otherwise. And so that was formative for me as well. And then I ran off to Calvin College to go to school and love Calvin. Proud graduate of Calvin College. Ended up studying biology, but the further along I went in my studies, I was less sure of what I wanted to do with that. You don't know what you want to do in college all the time. Like, surprise, 18-year-olds don't know what they want. So I was always debating between ministry and healthcare, which I kept saying that my dream job would be some combination of the two, which nursing, which is what I do now, turns out to be a really good way to live that out. And there's so many ways to do that. But for me personally, it turned out to be a really good fit. I thought maybe like being a youth pastor would be really fun. You kind of want to emulate the people who have an influence on your life. And I had a really solid youth pastor at my church growing up. And so I always thought that would be cool. But in the end, healthcare kind of won out. And so I ended up having to go back to school. So I got a bachelor's degree in biology. Took a couple years to try to figure out what the next step was. I thought I wanted to be a physician's assistant, which is a solid profession. But in the 2 years in between Calvin and nursing school, I ended up working at a hospital, kind of entry-level CNA, you know, nurse's aide type of stuff, kind of the basics of healthcare. And I just realized that I really, really loved what nurses did because they're the ones in the trenches with the patients. And they're the ones with people all the time. And I realized that that's what I really enjoyed. And I studied the sciences and I really enjoyed that. I loved the discussion. And going to Calvin, we had so many good discussions about the marriage of faith and science. And that they don't actually conflict as much as we think they do. And so I really enjoyed that. But it took some self-reflection to realize what I want to do with my life is be with people. I really enjoy people. And so although I could do the science, I could work on grad school, I realized that I don't actually enjoy it. And if I'm not actually going to enjoy it, then what's the point? So I went back to nursing instead and kind of did another bachelor's degree in nursing and then started working as a nurse. And that leaves me where I am today.
All right.
So yeah.
Well, good telling of the story.
That was really nicely done.
Okay, so I really like your description of you debated between ministry and sort of healthcare, these mm-hmm. two sides, and like nursing is this sort of middle ground for you. You found mm-hmm. this sweet spot. I think we all have been around nurses, right? Like when we're, you know, being cared
Everyone
for.
Everyone has one
right?
in their life, yeah. Right, yeah.
But what is it really like to sort of be a nurse? Like how would you describe a day?
Well, so this is an interesting question. About a month and a half ago, I switched to another job. So I'm doing a different kind of nursing than I've been doing for the last couple of years. So that's the beauty of nursing is there's a million directions you can go in it. You can work in a hospital, you can do home care, you could do some kind of administration. There's nurse legal consultants, like there's a million things you can do with it. So for me, the last couple of years, that has looked like hospital work. So I work at a big medical center in Chicago. Daily routines is it's a 12-hour shift. That's the only way our unit does it. Come in, kind of take report, figure out what kind of madness went down in the last 12 hours overnight, relieve the night people, let them go home and sleep and hope they don't fall asleep in their cars on the drive home. Kind of check in on your patients. There's always med passes, there's tasks during the day, and then people always going off to different procedures during the day. So what I've really enjoyed about it is, I really dig getting to know people. I just really enjoy people. And getting to know them and their quirks and what makes them tick and trying to see the good in them and kind of draw that out sometimes, which is a challenge for some people. But I have enjoyed that nursing allows you to get to know somebody so intimately when it's kind of unavoidable. Like some patients have kind of a reaction negatively to like a chaplain or somebody who's coming in for the explicit purpose of asking them big questions and trying to see where they're at. But a nurse, you're just there. You have to be there all the time. I'm in there doing tasks. I'm doing a dressing change. I'm doing all this other stuff that has to get done. But while I'm doing that, I can be having a good conversation and talking about their family life or whatever is going on or what are you watching right now? Or I see you have a rosary on your table. That's so beautiful. Where'd you get it? And what's the story behind it? And that's what I've really enjoyed is that just in doing my daily tasks, there's so many ways that you can show people that you are really interested in them and really care about them and want to get to know them without like sitting down and formally having a conversation being like, I care about you. You know, there's just so many ways to do that. There's body language. There's just gestures. There's hugs. I'll hug people in their hospital bed. And, you know, it's just a beautiful thing to be able to be there with somebody through some of the worst days of their lives. Because we see people in some of the worst days of their lives, and that's a privilege.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. No, that's a beautiful description of it. I like that a lot. I guess in my mind, you probably have some amazing people, and I'm sure you have amazing stories of just of people that you've really gotten to know.
Some ugly stories too. But yeah,
was part of where I was going is, how do you, the hard people?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That seems like it would be very difficult, because you are, not only do you have people with probably normally bad attitudes just in life, but they're in crisis.
And now they had open heart surgery and they weren't planning on that. I mean, that's been my cup of tea, honestly, is I enjoy a challenge in a person sometimes. And I enjoy, like, give me a really crabby person who just wants nothing to do with us, or somebody who's just completely despondent and just not engaged with their care anymore. They don't care. Like, I really enjoy trying to figure out how to motivate those people. So if it's somebody who's just crabby and just kind of being a jerk, you just call people out on it. And often that will turn into respect. Oh, this nurse won't take my garbage. Okay, maybe I should actually get out of bed and do what they say, or like some, you know, you kind of have to be careful with it. But as of yet, that hasn't bit me in the butt, so it's working okay. And with people who are just not engaged, sometimes we would get some people who are very sick. Our unit had a pretty high acuity, meaning the level of illness or the level of care they required was pretty high. Part of our unit was in an ICU. And so sometimes we would get folks who would be in the ICU for like a month or something. And just like in these awful like situations, it can be traumatic spending that much time in an ICU. You've got tubes and wires and needles, and sometimes you're sedated to keep like a tube in your throat or something. Like there's just all this awful stuff going on. So sometimes we'd get those people up from the ICU and they have no muscle tone because they've been laying in a bed for like a month. Like they can't move. They cannot actually move. And my favorite thing to do was jack up the bed so they're sitting up straight up, because they can't really get out of bed and get to a chair yet. They're not there yet. But sit them straight up in the bed, get right in their face, and kind of hold my hands out and just be like, just punch my hands. Just like, you can do it. Come on. Like I'll hold them really close. And I just love that as a way to kind of motivate people who are weak and mentally weak too, just kind of recovering from the trauma of being in the hospital for so long, and just kind of physically getting them up to fight, like work with me a little bit. And like the action of actually trying to punch a nurse's hand a foot in front of you, like just, I mean, I feel like it would sink in sometimes. Like I'm fighting. I can still fight for my health. I can still fight for my well-being. This is a fight. I need to participate. And like that doesn't always work, obviously, but sometimes it does. And like, how can you not smile at a nurse bouncing around like a couple feet in front of you trying to get her to punch your hands? Like, it's just, it brightens people's days too. So I really enjoyed trying to draw people out from their shell, because it's really hard being in the healthcare system as a chronically ill person. And we would see a lot of chronically ill people, and healthcare is a really, really frustrating system. It's frustrating to me, and I work in it sometimes, but yeah, it's some of the most resilient people I met are chronically ill patients who've just had to deal with so much. And so trying to draw that out of people of like, no, you're strong. You can do this. You got this. You got to fight and keep fighting. And then, you know, alternatively, when it's time to stop fighting, that's okay too. I worked in hospice too, and that's a beautiful field to work in as well. So just trying to figure out where people are at and figure out if they still got fighting them.
Wow.
And drawing it out.
That's, those are things that I think about that I could never do. You know what I mean? Like you saying that sounds so hard to me, you know?
I couldn't do what you do though. I've had patients or family members say that too. And like, you're angels, and it's so sweet. And it comes like, thank you. That is a genuine compliment. So I accept that. Thank you. I am not perfect, however. No person belongs on a pedestal. Don't put me up there. I am not perfect. I am so glad that I am playing a powerful role in your life right now. But that's not me. That is because I am empowered to do this. And I have been blessed and I've been given a personality that allows me to do this by my creator. But like, I would always then ask people like, what do you do for your, I'm an accountant. I could never do that job. Absolutely not. That sounds terrible to me. I hate doing my own taxes with those easy online things. Like I can do math. I'm not an idiot, but like, I couldn't do what you do.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, so, I'm sure you could. It's pretty easy. It's a lot of people care too. You know?
Yeah, but it's easier said than done. Like, we've all got our niche.
Yeah, we do. And we're all created to do different stuff.
Yes.
And that's beautiful.
The head can't say to the foot, I don't need you.
Very well said.
That's, you know.
Yeah. I love bringing the scripture in there already.
It's yeah. Great. I can't great. Remember where it is, but I remember it's in there.
Me neither. And I'm a pastor, okay. So you're good.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
So you were on a chronically ill floor, right?
Yeah. Some people were recovering from open heart surgery. So then that's a pretty predictable course. Those were the simpler patients sometimes, not always, but you know, on day two, you do this. On day three, you do this. By day five or six, we should be talking about getting out of here. You know, this is when you pull this tube out. This is when this wire goes away. And by this day, we want you walking the hallway. So those are some heart surgery patients, some just chronically ill. We'd have a lot of transplant folks, folks with implanted like heart pumps, kind of.
Okay.
LVADs, have to carry like a battery pack around with you for the rest of your life to power this pump. So like end stage disease sometimes, but what was your question?
Oh, yeah. No, but so when we've been in the hospital for certain things, it seems like a lot of what nurses that we've been around do is advocacy. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking in your role in, you know, with the ICU and chronic illness, mm-hmm. I would imagine there had to been a lot of advocacy that you do throughout your job for certain patients.
Yeah.
Is that part of what you do?
It is. Yeah. It was definitely teamwork though. I loved working with the social workers and case managers on the floor. Did a really fantastic job. I love this podcast because you interview all kinds of like counselors and social workers and like salt of the earth people, like, and my nurses, like just the best people ever. Advocacy is a big deal in nursing, and it's an art of trying to push and work really hard for your patient in the right way. Cause sometimes people like doctors or administrators are not receptive to that sometimes. Or just don't see what you see on a daily basis because you're with the patient all the time. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a team effort. We had a lot of physical and occupational therapists who really worked hard with patients too, who really advocated strongly. So I wish I could come up with a specific story. I mean, advocacy has been often just allowing the patient to work hard for themselves and kind of be themselves, like in the midst of all this junk that's going on with them and their day is scheduled and they don't have a lot of control. Like even folks who come in and have already been taking a bunch of medications, you can't take your own medications. You have to get them from me and I'm going to come in when I've dealt with the previous crisis. And so like you don't have control over that. So that's really frustrating. But just, you know, trying to advocate for a set schedule and allow the patient to do as much of what they can. Oh, I do have a specific story now. I remember I worked at a hospital in Michigan when I was a CNA, and we had somebody who was going to get married, elderly gentleman, met his second wife in a nursing home, ended up falling and breaking a hip the day of his wedding.
Oh my gosh.
So we put that man in a three-piece suit and we wheeled him down in a wheelchair and he got married in the hospital courtyard because he was determined to make that happen. He was going to get married that day. He didn't care. So we put that man in a three-piece suit and we got him in a specialized wheelchair so we wouldn't break his hip precautions, and we wheeled him down and we got what decorations we could. And he got married, and it was like, he was looking pretty rough by the time he got back up there. He needed some morphine, but he did it and he was very glad he did. In hospice, there were some weddings that happened at the bedside, often, you know, children or grandchildren that just wanted to do it and let their loved one witness it in their last days. So yeah, those are always special stories and special moments that are fun to witness. for us, great, it's nobody wants to get married under those circumstances. Right, but, you know, from our perspective, it's kind of like, yeah, you do your thing. You continue life.
For sure.
Despite these tragedies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cute.
Yeah, it is. It's very cute. Yeah. It's very cute. I love that. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the big things that's happened sort of recently is you've had a job transition within nursing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about just what you were doing before and then now and all that?
Yeah. So a lot of my stories have been coming from the bedside, which is the job I just left about 2 months ago or something. That was not an easy decision to make. I have been at the bedside as a nurse for about 3 years. And then before that, through school round one and school round two, I was working as a nurse's aide so I've been at the bedside for about 10 years already. So that was not an easy decision to make because I love so much of the bedside work. But what ended up kind of getting to me was the long hours, because you leave the house at 6 a.m. and you get home at 8:30, and it's just a crazy day in between. There were so many days when I would be walking back to my car at 8:30 at night and realize I haven't been to the bathroom all day. All my patients have. Like, I know everybody else has gone to the bathroom, but I haven't had time to, and I didn't even realize until just now, 13 hours later. That's not good for you. I just started noticing things in my body that just like a not yet 30-year-old probably shouldn't have yet. And I always worried about getting burned out at the bedside and just not having the work-life balance. And so I was very aware that I wanted to leave before I got burned out. And I just started seeing some signs. There was a coworker, there was a patient who was just particularly difficult and just didn't care to do anything anymore. Did not care. Got really angry whenever you tried to go into his room and do anything. And you try to break down those walls, and I tried, and he just was not having it. And there was just nothing you can do. And a coworker one time said, well, you should take care of him today. Just throw him a little bit of that Sarah magic. He'll pop out of it. And I was like, what? Sarah magic? That's a thing? It was like the highlight of my nursing career. But at the same time, without even thinking, I shot back, I don't have any magic for this guy. And I heard the words come out of my mouth and was just like, ooh, that's not a place where I want to be. That's not a place where I thought I would be at this point. And when you start to feel that coming on, like, it's time for a change, because I never want to be the person who's just burned out and crabby, because it always influences patient care, and patients don't need that. They're trying to recover from a surgery or from an illness. Like, nobody needs that. And so I started getting worried about burnout and becoming one of those crabby people who just can't be bothered, can't take extra time, doesn't want to go the extra mile. And I love going the extra mile, but when you start to feel that coming on, it's time to shift and it's time to move around. But like, I didn't hate my job. I loved it. And so I took my time trying to find a good fit, and just the nature of the floor where I was at, the turnover was super high. People kind of rage quit sometimes mid orientation or after like 6 months, 'cause it was just, it's a heavy floor. It's a difficult place to be sometimes. Coworkers started asking me, when are you leaving? Are you applying to jobs? Because they knew before I did that, like, it was time to go. Not in a bad way. And then this opportunity came up with a transplant team at my medical center. All of the people that I knew connected to this team, I had enormous respect for. I've seen them on the floors doing clinical work. They know what they're doing. Great rapport with patients, just excellent judgment, very knowledgeable folks. And so an opportunity came up with that team, and I just decided to go for it. So in my job now, I'm a coordinator for transplant program. So I have a group of patients that I help manage, stay on top of lab work, review consults, notes, things like that. There's a lot of education. So when somebody just gets a transplant, and even beforehand, you do classes with family members and patients and talk about all the crazy precautions you have to follow, because it's a huge life-altering procedure. Like, life is never the same after a transplant. Your life has to revolve around your medications and trying not to get an infection and all kinds of stuff. So Yeah, that's been the transition. I'm still in the middle of it. Like, I've only been doing this job for a month and a half, and so it's a big job. It's a lot to learn. So I'm still definitely not comfortable there. I'm still learning. I'm asking a ton of questions, but it's a good transition. And I love seeing on my new team how all these nurses that I'm working with, all the other coordinators, just care fiercely about their patients. They are up to bat for those patients and will work so hard for them. And just know their stories too. Though I overheard a coworker calling up about lab work and, how's your daughter? What's going on with her? And then spent like 15 minutes talking about like some daughter's issues that were going on and mental health stuff. And just like, they just look at the whole picture and it's just very holistic care. And I see the nurses that I work with who used to be nurses on the floor that I worked on, and they're all in the category of like super nurse to me. And so I just was really excited to join this team of people who knew what they were doing. And like, that's the level of nursing that I aspire to get to. And I also recognize that like taking care of somebody on the floor in the hospital, it's a very small window into the healthcare system. Like, hospital admission is like last resort. You don't want to be in the hospital if you don't have to. There's so much care that happens outside of the hospital. And so I'm excited to learn that part of it. So part of me felt like I was kind of selling out when I left the bedside, but I'm trying to shut that voice down. Because I needed it, and I needed to move, and I needed to do something different. And it's growing me in big ways and ways that I think I need. So it's good.
Yeah. From the beginning of, you know, you're talking about going into nursing and stuff, it was very much people oriented, mm-hmm. right? It was like, I love people.
Yeah.
That's why I love doing what I do.
Yeah.
How has that transition been? Like, how has your people time changed?
Mm-hmm.
Between the two,
yeah.
The turnover.
Yeah. It's, I'll get to the depth with my patients over time. Right now, I'm still getting to know everybody. So you don't get that instant intimacy and depth with patients that you do sometimes on the floor in the hospital when like they're going through a really difficult time. I just walked in and they're crying. Like, what do we talk about? Or, you know, they just share stories. And like, when you spend that much time with somebody in a 12-hour period, you get to know them very quickly. And right now in my current job, it's smaller pieces of the story. And I'm gonna learn their whole story, but it'll take more time. So it's just a different way to do what I was doing on the floor. The goal is always holistic, comprehensive care and trying to look at the whole person and figure out what are your goals in life. You want a transplant. Why? Like, what are we fighting for? Do you want to make it to your daughter's wedding? Do you really want to start jogging again? Like, what are you fighting for? And what makes you tick? And that's what I really liked about floor nursing too. So it's really the same thing. It's just a different format. So I have less intense people time. It's not as much as taking care of four or five people for 12 hours a day. I've instead got like 100 people that I kind of get little snippets of throughout the day, and I'll learn them over the years. Yeah. So it's just a different way to do the same thing. We're working towards the same end goal.
Yeah. Just to contextualize it a little bit for myself.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit like, what you used to do is like what I do on a retreat, right? I take like some students, or I take a group of people on a retreat, and it's like 3 days of nonstop community, right?
Yes.
And so we get into certain things on a retreat, but that's not pastoring. Like, mm-hmm. being a pastor is
a daily grind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
getting to know people over time. And it feels like you're almost pastoring people through the mm-hmm. Transplant process in some ways.
Yeah. I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that work?
That sounds good. I'll take it. That sounds good. Yeah. No, and like, the retreats are awesome, and there's a place for that, but there's also daily life, and you need both. You know, the intense periods are sometimes really good to straighten things out or get outside of your normal bubble or your normal daily life and kind of reevaluate and take a step back. But daily life is something different, and you can't avoid that. So
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like what you're talking about, the holistic view of just the people's goals. I don't think when I think, you know, a transplant, I think very, you know, it's a one-time event, sort of like I got a new set of lungs or something, right?
Yeah,
But it's way bigger than that, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's how we try to look at it, because it's, and you have to, because it's not just a surgery. There is so much follow-up that is involved. You have to get regular blood draws for monitoring. There's just so much, and I'm still learning it all, but your life has to revolve around medications that you take every 12 hours, and the timing is very important. There's so many awful side effects for the drugs that you're taking to prevent you from organ rejection, and so then it's a whole other job managing the side effects. So, what we tell patients often is it takes a village to make this whole thing happen. It is not just the surgery. The surgery is done. That's the surgeon's work. Now you've got your work to do. You have to walk. You have to take your medications. You have to follow the regimen as best as you can, especially initially. Yeah, it's a big deal. And there are times when it's important to remind people why they did it in the first place, because it's daunting. It's a huge thing, and it's exhausting sometimes. And those reminders, or examples of other patients who have gotten to travel again, or look, this person's hiking again. Like there's a benefit where you climb the Hancock. And we've had patients who go back and get to do that after surgery. And it takes time to get back to that place physically, but you know, it's good to keep that in mind and keep the big picture in mind of why did you do this in the first place? Let's keep working towards that goal. Because if I tell somebody to do something, like it's hard to motivate someone without knowing what they want out of life and what they want out of it. That doesn't come from me. That has to come from them. I can't give them my goals. They have their goals for their life. I want to make it to this point. I want to do this. Great. Let's work towards it. This is how we can do it. Because that's the only way I feel like you're going to get good results, is if it's an internal motivation. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm still figuring out my job. I'm 2 months in.
No, that's really
so
fascinating.
So far, that's my insight. But
no,
hey.
I like that. It just, even, I mean, to go back to scripture, it reminds me of Paul saying, like, we push forward towards the goal, right?
Yeah.
Like the resurrection is our goal. And I think a lot of times, not to spiritualize everything or to bring everything back.
Please
to
do.
Like,
yeah.
Know, but just that when we forget our goal, right, it's the same thing. Like,
yeah,
we have to be reminded, like, no, yeah, there's something way bigger involved in all of this stuff. And I think what you're doing is on that same level of just, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. So,
yeah.
That's really interesting. So on your caseload,
yeah,
are you working with a specific organ all the time, or are you just sort of?
Yes, I do lung transplant.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought I remembered that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good memory. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and a lung transplant is like one of the more difficult transplants. Is that true?
Yes. Because we tell people it's the only organ that is exposed to the outside. So when you get a transplant, you have to be on immunosuppressants. So your body doesn't recognize that this thing that we just put in is foreign and doesn't try to kick it out and rebel against it. So you have to be on immunosuppressants, so your immune system isn't at 100% intentionally. So then on the opposite side of that, it can't fight off bugs very well. And so you're always kind of trying to work this middle line of anti-rejection versus infection, because folks are very susceptible to infections. So it's one of the more difficult transplants, probably the most difficult transplant, because you're, with every breath, you're bringing in the outside world and bacteria and all kinds of things that we don't want in there, but you know, there's no way around it. So
yeah
it's one of the more difficult transplants.
Wow, I'd never really thought about that.
And if you think about, like, there's so many things you feel, like if you feel like you cannot breathe, that is so, there's so much anxiety associated. It feels terrible. You know what that's like.
Yeah,
so, you know,
I'm just flashing back to all my asthma attacks throughout my life.
Like,
it is so terrifying.
It's, you start panicking. Like, it's an awful feeling. So it's difficult for a lot of reasons. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's intense.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It is. And I have so much respect for our patients. Like, there are just people that I love seeing already, because it's fun because I got to see them on the floor that I work on. And now sometimes I get to see them in our clinic visits in my new job and be like, you look amazing. I remember seeing you when you were just out of surgery and you could hardly walk. And, you know, you felt terrible because you were less than a week out of having your chest cut open. That feels pretty awful. And now look at you. You are walking around. You're going to baseball games. You're doing the things that you want to do out of life. And so it's really cool to be able to see both sides of that.
Yeah, in your current role, I guess you will see a lot more of the redemptive side of it, right? Because you journey with them through all facets, as opposed to just like in your old gig, it was sort of like getting them through that first crucial sort of time. And now you have a longer period.
Yeah, but then, I mean, the patients that I'll have, they are mine until I no longer work at the medical center I work at or they're gone. And so I will see the other side of it too. They're mine for life. And I think... it's a difficult transplant. Some people do really well, but some people really don't. And I think what national like survival rate is like 50% in 5 years. I think it's rough. It's very hard. So we'll see the other side of it too. We do see a redemptive side, but then, you know, sometimes we see people who don't do well, and that's difficult too. Yeah.
I'll be interested to talk to you after you've been through this gig a little bit more.
I'm being careful because HIPAA, I can't say anything specific, but
I totally get it. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how, I feel like that could easily come home with somebody. You know what I mean? How you.
Yeah. And it can, I haven't had too much difficulty with that. Like I've brought some things home emotionally. Like I've had dreams about patients. It's very weird. But I kind of had a crash course in boundaries in college round one with people. I did kind of an on-campus ministry position that, unfortunately, I was very, very bad at boundaries and ran into some difficult folks and kind of had some toxic relationships. So I had like a crash course in boundaries. If anybody wants to read a good book on boundaries, it's called Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend, and it changed my life in college. But like I've kind of worked to maintain JJ's giving me eyes. Okay.
Yes, JJ is in this interview. She's sitting, tagging along. So.
But anyway, that was a fantastic book and helped me kind of draw some lines and figure out where you can let people in and then where you have to kind of let go and be like, I am going to work really hard on things I have control over. And then on the things that I don't, I have to let go and I have to just let it happen. And I can't freak out over things that I have no control over. Huh. I'll bust my tail for the things that I can do. But I mean, with patients, sometimes you work really hard, but you can't give more than somebody else can for their health. So that's another thing for me to remember, that you can't care more about somebody else's body than they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Learning that lesson in college was a great investment in your future career.
Yes.
That could get pretty ugly, I would assume.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It was a good timely lesson.
God's so good. Like
that. Yeah. It's really a fun lesson too. No, but
one you can't learn without walking through it.
No, you can't. Absolutely not. Somebody could tell me that a million times and you will not listen until you trudge through it yourself and see the truth in it yourself. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you see ministry playing out in your career. We've talked a little bit about it already, and it's a helping profession, so it seems like it's somewhat easy. But can you just speak to how you have seen that kind of come up in your job?
I've been ministered to by patients, and I think that's a really good thing to remember. Is that we always think that the person doing the serving is just always the better person or the higher person or the more powerful person because you're the one doing the helping. But trying to look at every person as valuable, and they have something to contribute to the world. I remember people when I worked in a nursing home in college, there was a guy who, it was so fun. You'd help kind of get him ready for bed, and he couldn't ever remember my name, but always he'd had to have his piece of chocolate before bed, and then he'd lay down and then he'd say a prayer and he always prayed for whoever was in the room with him. And he would pray in such detail. He had Alzheimer's. He couldn't remember my name. He couldn't remember where he was. He didn't know anything. I think he was a former pastor. But he would pray for me and sometimes in detail that I hadn't told him and that he couldn't remember even if I had. And I'm like, the Lord is working through this man while he's praying in his bed. Or I've had patients just say the most wonderful, sweet things to me. And sometimes they just develop into friendships as much as is appropriate in the hospital, you know, but they've just turned into friendships. And so I have felt so ministered to in my job as well. But yeah, I see ministry so much in just a ministry of presence and just being there and walking with people through the trenches, through those really ugly parts of their lives where they don't know if they're going to make it or not, or they don't know if they want to make it or not, because it's really, really hard. And just being with there and witnessing their struggle and being kind through it and just seeing them. I found that to be a really powerful thing of just like, I see you, I acknowledge where you're at, and it's really awful, and not trying to gloss over the ugliness or the trauma of chronic illness and just trying to witness other people and see them. I had somebody who was in the hospital for a really long time. I had a nursing student with me that day, and so she was kind of helping out a little bit, but mostly watching. And so I was talking to him. I knew him really well. He'd been around for a while, and just asked, you know, hey, I've got a student with me. What's your advice to her? I've told her my 2 cents. Like, what can you tell her about what makes a good nurse? And oh my gosh, he made me cry because he just went on this long speech about how much we have meant to him, the healthcare workers, the therapists and PT, OT, the nurses, some of the doctors, but like how much nurses in particular were his best friends in the hospital and his best friends in life, and how much it meant to him that we saw these pictures he showed him of went back when he was well, and we knew his mom, and we knew what he liked to eat from the place down the street where his mom would pick up food and whatever. Like, he just talked so eloquently about how much it meant to him to know that we saw him and we knew him so well. And it just came out of left field. I was expecting something lighthearted, but he answered my question really hard, and it just knocked me sideways. Like, I will never forget that. And just how much power you have to influence somebody and to support them and encourage them when you're in the mess with them.
Yeah. I mean, you're walking the gospel, you know, yeah, before them, right?
Well, yeah, we all are, but
that is such good stuff. One thing though, I'm going to like just take us off topic here for a minute, but it's my podcast, so
yeah,
I'm going to do whatever, right?
Yeah.
Something that you've talked a little bit about, and you know, you shared at Life Church and whatnot, is just talking about singleness, mm-hmm, you know, and just, do you mind if I would love to give you some time just to sort of talk about singleness.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of broke ground on this on like our Easter service that we had. That was kind of like a testimony related to singleness. And yeah, Dave asked me to speak on that. And when he asked me, like a big part of me was just like, no, I can't talk about that. That's like scary and super like, I hate talking about that because I hate that I'm uncomfortable with it and that I don't enjoy single life all the time. And it's kind of a downer to talk about. So like, I can't do that. But at the same time, I had this just resounding, like, you need to do this. You need to talk about it, because I had just become comfortable talking about it with my small group about how difficult I find it sometimes. And so it was just, yeah, I kind of broke ground at our Easter service, just kind of opening up about like, this is where I'm at. And God is awesome because God has worked through this and I've become closer to the Lord through this struggle. You know, I'm a sheltered person to say that like this is my struggle in my life is like being single. I've recognized that I have not had too hard of a life, if that's the thing that I'm worried about. So grain of salt there. But yeah, I think it's really important to talk about, because it took me a while to kind of work up the courage, because it's a downer. People don't like to talk about it. It's not sexy to be unhappy in your singleness and to want something else and not have it. And like, it's, there's nothing necessarily that other people can do about it. So it's uncomfortable sometimes in conversations. And I've had like under the radar frustration sometimes about the things that folks say intending to be helpful about like all in God's time. You know, I've had friends who have walked through infertility and like, it's just such a parallel road in so many ways, because it's just such a good desire. It's so, such a natural desire, but in so many ways, you don't have a lot of control over that. And so just the things that people say in order to try to make you feel better, or to try to give you an answer of like, all in God's time, or happens when you least expect it, or just stop trying, you know, and then you'll get pregnant, or then you'll meet the man of your dreams, or whatever. And people mean very well by that. But sometimes it's really frustrating, because in that response, it doesn't make me feel better, because I know God has a plan. The problem is, he's not telling me. Like, that's the difficult thing. That's the frustrating thing. And like, your answer, it's not really an answer. Like, I was told at a wedding 7 years ago, it'll be your turn next. And that was before I was even worried about being single. I didn't have a care in the world. I was happily walking through life. I was doing my thing, trying to figure out what the next step was with my career. And somebody, some ancillary friend I didn't even know, was just like, you'll be next. I'm like, what? Will I? Number one, will I? Like, do you know that?
How,
like,
do you know that? Yeah.
Like, unless you have the spiritual gift of prophecy, don't tell me when this is going to happen, or even that it will happen, because you don't know. You don't know. It's a very real possibility that, you know, we might not find somebody.
Yeah.
And that happens all the time. And it doesn't mean that I did something wrong, or that God isn't good and that God isn't faithful. So, I mean, first, I think it's just helpful to acknowledge, I mean, that's all, it's all very personal. I know other people have felt this way too, that I've been able to talk about it a little bit more with friends. I'm like, oh, you feel this way too. Good. That's helpful. Yeah. So it's just good to first acknowledge where I'm at, and you know, what my kind of feelings and reservations and hurt is about all of that. I mean, in talking about it, I've also just gained so much in how I think about the body of Christ and the family that we are called to be in the church, and how, I mean, yeah, the head can't say to the foot, I don't need you. And so often you see married folks and families held up as models in the church. Wonderful, wonderful models. I love it. I came from a family. Families are great. Like, I love all these wonderful models, but you also need people in there who aren't in that place. Like, we need diversity in the church, and always, like, economically, racially, in terms of your marital status. I mean, like, my marital status is not an indicator of spiritual maturity. And so I've also found it helpful to just lift up single role models and single people who are doing life well and doing ministry well, and how beautiful of a thing it is. Like, I've been invited to your house now 3 times, and I just feel like so at home here already. And well, just what a God, wonderful no thing. Idea. Like, yeah, it's just such a wonderful thing to be invited into somebody's home. And like, I got to host, I'm getting to host my small group at my house for the last, I don't know, like 6-7 months, something like that. And just what a privilege it is, and what a gift it is to me, to be able to bring people into my home. And that kind of feels like I'm being held up, and just be able to host people and welcome people in and make them feel at home where I'm at and welcome them into my life. Like, we all just need each other, and we all have something to gain from each other, but just kind of dispelling the myth that like single people don't have it all together.
Yeah.
And married people do. And that's something I need to dispel in my own head, just in the sense of like, it's internalized so much that I start to believe, or I have believed, that like, you have arrived when you're married and like, you have it all together. And that's not at all true.
Right.
I have it on good authority from several married friends that they don't have it all together. But for a while, you know, I had in my head that like, you've arrived when you've gotten to that point. And it's just garbage. It's not true. And we both need each other. Single people need people and families, and we all just need each other in the church, and we all have to grow from each other and benefit from each other, and we all have a role to play in the church.
Yeah, it feels like even, I mean, just in the church, there's this sort of like American dream mentality,
yeah,
right? Where
yeah.
It's like, I take these steps.
This
and,
is what you need to
yes,
want.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And these are the steps that I take, and these are the times that I take them. And if I'm off of this, Life doesn't work out like that, then there's something wrong with me, right?
Yeah.
Just like if, you know, if I struggle financially, you know, mm-hmm. there's something wrong with me. You know, we have these like preconceived notions and they could not be further from truth.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. That exactly. Yeah. So there's so many feelings about it. So If my thoughts are jumbled, it's because I'm still figuring this out. But baseline, we all need each other. Everyone is valuable in the kingdom. Everyone is being used. Everyone has the image of God that they are showing and that they are working out in the world. And so we just need to see everybody as equal, valuable members of the church. And that's something I need to remind myself to. Enneagram, I'm a 9. So sometimes I think I'm not important or that I downplay myself or like I'm very chill, but there's all kinds of stuff going on in the background so these are things that I need to remind myself too of just like, no, you have just as valuable of a role to play. You are called to leadership just as much as the next person. And this is something that you need to live out, that you are called to live out. It's, you know, and we just need to need each other more, I think, and see each other as valuable no matter where we are in life.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, like even the founders of our religion, of Christianity, we're all single people.
Yeah. But how many pastors have you had in your life who are single?
I never have.
Can you think of anyone?
No, I can't.
No. I can't either. Right. Or no. Okay. No, that's not true. One youth pastor for like a blip in high school. That's it.
Right.
Yeah. And
that doesn't happen. What's
the deal with that? Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
But I mean, I think even in your, you know, testimony at Easter, you talk about how Paul says, no, you should probably be single like me.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can't control yourself, then go ahead and get married. Right? Yes. It's like we shove that one under the rug, right?
Yeah.
It's like we pretend like verses like that are non-existent.
Yeah.
Right? Because they don't mesh with what we view as reality.
Yeah. And it's a cultural thing. I don't know where we just, the American dream, if we've let that trump what scripture tells us, that's probably a part of it. Yeah. But I mean, a lot of these like idealization of, you know, young families or couples or whatever, it can be very subtle sometimes, just like in, you know, the stories or analogies in messages and in sermons and stuff. But I've found myself picking out so much more the positives. Like I'm listening to a podcast now, Typology. It's on the Enneagram.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. That's I'll put that in the show notes. That's a great podcast.
Yeah, it's very good. But they interviewed the Goffs and they introduced them and talked about how
one of them's a 9, right? Is one of them?
Yes.
Is she a 9?
Yeah. I think she's a 9. So I got a lot out of that.
Nice.
But it was cool because they talked about like, so this is how, you know, it's helpful to see how different types interact with in marriage and relationships in general and friendships and family relationships. And it was just so subtle, but I just felt so much more welcomed into the conversation. Even though they were interviewing a married couple, it was like, this is translatable to all relationships. And of course you know that, and of course it is, but naming it and saying this is translatable, this is applicable to you no matter what kind of relationships you are. It was so small, but for some reason I just remembered that and was just like, oh, thank you for inviting me to the table in this as well. And it's helpful. So it's those little subtle things that just kind of I notice now more often, and just it's just kind of refreshing, and it just makes me feel a little bit more welcome. And
No, that makes a lot of sense. That's a good message for me, just as a preacher, to just be cognizant, of all of those things, right? Welcoming everybody in. I think that's a good word.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's wrap up with our final two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so first, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
I think the most interesting was nannying. I nannied for like 3 different families in high school and a little bit in college, and that's just the most interesting because it's you just wear so many different hats. Like I started out nannying for the kids, but then one family had grandparents with illnesses move in with them so they could help take care of them. And so I started out by walking the dog, and then they wanted me to walk grandma too, so she could get her exercise, but she would get lost in the neighborhood. So I'd take the dog and grandma for a walk every day. And then they went out of town and things happened. And so I was then a taxi for grandparents for a little while. And yeah, I think that's like, I've had to wear a lot of hats for that job, which like, I don't have any insane stories, but yeah, I think that's been the most interesting, just seeing a family up close and personal and seeing all their stuff. Like it's very interesting. And then seeing the kids grow up, like one of them, yeah, they're in college now. And I'm like, how am I that old? This is crazy. So yeah, that's one of the more interesting jobs.
Yeah, that's cool.
I guess.
I like that. Okay, so finally, what one piece of advice would you give to somebody looking to bring ministry into their vocation?
I would say, know thyself. First, choose a good profession for you, because it's pretty hard to do ministry in a job you hate. Like, you can do it, of course. And there's times when you just got to hustle and you just have to do a job to bring in money. Yeah. Like, you have to do jobs. So, like, I've been able to kind of figure out what job suits my personality well. And that's a luxury sometimes. And so I acknowledge that. But if you can kind of know yourself and figure out what makes you tick and what kind of gives you life and what makes you want to go the extra mile, like that's a place where God has called you to. Because he can give you joy in doing his work and doing his ministry. And so if you kind of can try to figure out what you enjoy about your job, that makes it so much easier to do ministry, to bring your whole self to it and to, yeah, bring the gospel to that situation, is figure out what you enjoy about. Like for me with nursing or with my job in general, I realized that I really, really enjoy people and I really like getting to know people. And nursing was just the best avenue for me to do that because it put me in the trenches with people. And I like being there in the messiness with folks and getting to know the rough stuff and figuring out what's really going on with them. And so that's where I can do ministry effectively because I love it and I enjoy it. And so that's where God put me. But if you enjoy another part of nursing, I had a friend who almost dropped out because she realized she hated people. She hated clinicals. She didn't like floor nursing. She almost dropped out. And we were just like, no, you are so close. Like, nobody else in her family had ever gone to college. And we were just like, you've got one semester left, just grit it out. And you can, like, we can help you figure something out. And she does something in administration now. Like, she's never done the bedside, but she found something that worked for her. And so like, you just have to figure out what you enjoy about your job and what makes you tick and try to just chase after that. And then
that's good. No, I love that. That's great. That's great advice.
It's helpful for introspective people. For people who do not like the self-work, that's probably terrible advice because they're like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to get to know myself and figure that out. So maybe that's good advice for a certain group of people. But yeah, I found it to be helpful.
No, it's super helpful. I love it. I love it. Well, thanks again for being interviewed and all that stuff. It
was
fun.
Yeah. So. Thanks for having me. This is really fun to talk about. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the conversation. I enjoy listening, so it's fun to be on.
You're on. You're on.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Sarah. I know I took a lot of insights away from what she had to say. I'd love to hear what you thought. If you have comments or any of that, let me know. And other people that I should be having on, other professions you want to hear from, let me know about that too. I will work at getting those done. So, hope you enjoyed, and until next time, get out there and hustle.